are elite.
For everything you need to know about Mercedes Moné's AEW debut, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
What three wrestling matches would you watch if you were stranded on a desert island? This is what I'm asking wrestling's best. In the ring, around the ring, behind the scenes, or behind a microphone. I'm Tom Campbell. Thank you for joining me on Cultaholic Island for another episode of Desert Island Graps.
Are we going? Are we going? I need to get one of them things that people have at the start of their streams. The little countdown screen. Are we going? I don't know if we're actually going. Are we going? I don't know. There he is!
Oh my god!
My tits are red raw.
His tits are red raw.
Fucking flopping about like this. Fucking flopping about. Get out of here. Boo that man.
How can you be from up north and not eat meat?
That's what my dad asks me every single time he rings me up now.
I'm cross. I'm carrying cross. I'm cross. I'm carrying cross. I'm cross that I never lost this belt, so it's coming home with me.
So many talented people. What the fuck am I doing here? Fuck off, pal. Yeah, give over you. Yeah, give over you. That's lovely.
Cocked it dead hard. He's got it going.
Andrew Hodkinson, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm all good. Thank you for being the 100th visitor to Cultaholic Island. Cheers to you.
Oh, cheers to you.
We should have got a bottle of bubbly.
We should have done. But thank you so much for having me. I've watched this for a long time. It feels surreal to actually be on the show and let alone the 100th episode as well. So thank you.
Tell me you're from Yorkshire without telling me you're from Yorkshire.
Hey, up. Nice. What's the ennui?
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 And for those listening in America?
That means, what are you on with? What are you doing? How are you doing?
What are you doing? I like that. Which part of Yorkshire are you from?
From Skipton, so North Yorkshire.
Because I think to people around the world, sort of Yorkshire just gets lumped into the north.
Yeah.
Does that annoy you?
Well,
because I know we all have a laugh about, Andrew Dingle, etc.
I mean, I think it's allowed because there's a lot of crossover with a lot of stuff. But they're all very different places with very different things. And, you know, it's weird to have, I don't usually have pride in a lot of things, but I mean, being Yorkshire is one of them, I think, for sure.
Why are you so proud about being from Yorkshire?
Just because my family are from Yorkshire and stuff, and there's very much like a working class mentality, especially in my family and everything. I think in Yorkshire as well, just with all the farming stuff and growing up around that and really just like knuckling down and getting on with the things you want to get on with. I really like that about it.
There's an energy to Yorkshire like that. I think everybody that you speak to, like there's that northern steel that comes from it, I think.
Yeah.
Were you proud of being from Yorkshire when you were younger? Or was that something that came later on?
That came later on. I think when I was younger, you kind of don't really think about those things so much. And then it was more sort of when I started getting into music and things like that and seeing bands like Arctic Monkeys and everything and the Cribs and people like that and Bring Me the Horizon, you're like, this represents where I'm from and stuff, and I really like that. It just felt right, and that's when I was like, yeah, I'm from Yorkshire, yeah, it's all good.
You wear it like a badge then. Yeah. You're like, yeah, I'm proud to be from here.
Definitely.
You're living up in the northeast now, though. I mean, presumably, would you want to move back at some point?
Never.
Never?
So that's the thing. Like, as much as I'm very proud to be from Yorkshire, I'm fine staying here. I wanted to get out of Yorkshire, Skipton, for all my life growing up. So to finally get out of there, I'm feeling happy just to stay here forever.
Okay, well, I want to touch on that a little bit more as mm-hmm. we get into it, but we are here today to talk about your life and times and give you three wrestling matches to watch while stranded on a desert island.
Yeah.
So you're going to pick three, we'll mm-hmm. burn them onto a metaphorical DVD, ooh. And you can do with them what you will, presumably watch them, one would hope. What would you like your first match to be, Andrew?
I'd like my first match to be the Triangle Ladder match from WrestleMania 2000 with the Hardys, the Dudley Boys, and Edge and Christian.
Okay, so why this match?
Because this match got me into wrestling and solidified my love for it at a very young age, and at that point in time, I'd seen little bits of wrestling and I was like, that's pretty cool, that's fine. But there was nothing that really excited me about it until I saw, wow, wrestling's more than just holds and big burly people rolling around. And this, seeing the ladders in the ring and stuff and seeing these guys really put everything on the line and being quite young and smaller guys too, that was exciting to me because as just a smaller, trim person, that I was like, wow, other people can do stuff like that. And that's really cool.
With this match then, so you say this is the match that turned you onto wrestling.
Yeah.
Where were you when you watched it for the first time?
I was at my auntie's house on a farm in Long Preston. And my cousin, who's a lot older than me, he's my dad's cousin really, but we like call him cousins and stuff. He was in the other room, just laid on the sofa, just watching this VHS of WrestleMania 2000. And I'd seen little bits. I was like coming in and out and I'd seen the hardcore scramble stuff. And I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. And I was like dipping in and out, coming backwards and forwards. And then finally when I saw, I think it was Bubba does an atomic drop to Jeff and the height of it and the way that Jeff sells it, I was like, that looks amazing. And I just sat down. He was like laid on the sofa and I just sat down in front of him and that was it. I was transfixed. Throughout the whole entire thing, I was transfixed and I was like,
so it was the awesome. Bubba Bomb that really brought you into wrestling.
It was the Bubba Bomb, yeah.
Away from all the holds and stuff that you'd mm-hmm. What was your, you mentioned there about like holds, like yeah. You thought it was a bunch of holds and stuff. What was your experience of wrestling before this then?
It was like old World of Sport stuff. When I was very young and I used to go around to my grandma's house, she loved all of that, like giant haystacks and all that stuff. And she'd have it on and she'd be like screaming at the TV, like, come on, come on.
It's such a stereotype when you hear stuff like that, but it's very true.
Yeah.
Like, and you're from, again, it's that Yorkshire pride again. Like Yorkshire was such a hotbed for wrestling at that point. Yeah. World of Sport came, you know, was built in the, mm-hmm. in the Yorkshire, in the smoky back rooms of Yorkshire pubs,
yeah.
Essentially.
It was really, I just didn't get it and that wasn't for me. I've obviously grown to appreciate a lot more sort of technical old school kind of wrestling and things like that now. But back then I was like, I don't get it, but grandma's having fun, so I'm fine. And then I'd be like, come on, I just want to see Blankety Blank now. Come on, let's get World of Sport done. Let's get Lily Savage on TV.
With that match, with the Triangle Ladder mm-hmm. match then, so your cousin was watching it, he was chilling out on the sofa, you saw the Bubba Bomb, you mm-hmm. stayed with the match. Was there anything else from that match that you remembered watching for the first time and thinking, this is amazing?
Another Bubba Dudley spot where he is, him and Matt Hardy are on the outside and he set up a table and he just powerbombs Matt straight through off the announce table, through a table, and it is still to this day, in my opinion, the best powerbomb I think I've ever seen. The way Matt just like perfectly goes through it and like just the table just folds and splits in half. I was like, oh, wow.
There's a weird satisfaction, like not unlike like popping the packing sheets and stuff yeah. when a powerbomb like that is done so perfectly. Like,
oh,
it's very neat and very tidy.
So
and it's,
good.
It's deeply satisfying that was. So you stayed and watched the whole show then?
Yeah. So after that and obviously, I mean, there's some, WrestleMania 16 gets a bad rep, but I hold it obviously in high regard just because it was the first major wrestling show that I'd seen. So you still got like the match of Chris Benoit, Kurt Angle and Chris Jericho. And I think it's like the two falls and it's for the Intercontinental and the European Championship.
Yeah, first fall for the IC, yeah. Second fall for the Euro.
That match is so, so good. Like really good. The main event at the time as well, like seeing Big Show, just this giant who I'd never seen anybody as big as that before, like moving around and stuff. I was like, wow, and like seeing Mick Foley and then eventually becoming a big fan of Mick Foley's stuff later on too. There was a lot of stuff in there that really just grabbed me. As I mentioned before as well, the hardcore stuff, I was very much into like all the hardcore stuff, and then that put me onto ECW a little bit later on and things like that. And yeah, it just even to this day, it really holds a special place in my heart, regardless of all the criticism that pay-per-view gets.
You talk about staying with different members and family and stuff. Were you quite a close family as you were growing up?
Yeah, we definitely were. And unfortunately, like as we got older and some things happened in the family and stuff, we grew apart, and that's sad. Like, I still see quite a lot of them. Like some of them, the cousin that actually got me into wrestling and I borrowed the WrestleMania 16 VHS from and then ultimately ruined it and replaced it with a Toy Story 2 thing, but that's a story for another
what?
Day.
So, yeah. So what did you do? So you had WrestleMania on VHS. So this was, yeah. If I remember correctly, WrestleMania 2000 VHS was a double VHS.
It was, with like a Best of Raw.
Beefy boy in there,
it was
yeah.
So good. And from that Best of Raw thing, all I remember is I can't remember who it was now. Who used to do the Owen Hart impressions?
There was a guy called Jason Sensation.
That was it. Yeah,
Jason Sensation.
Yeah,
right.
And he had the nose on and stuff. And I just remember him going, "Enough is enough," and it's time for change and all that. And that was awesome. but yeah, so my cousin was like, "Yeah, you can take that and watch it as much as you want." And I did watch it as much as I wanted, and I rewinded it multiple times to the Triangle Ladder match, to the point where it got stuck in the VHS player, and I felt awful. And my dad was like, "Look, don't worry about it." And he, like, somehow we got the tape out and it was all mangled. My dad was like, "Watch this." And he, like, damped the sticker and took the sticker off of the WrestleMania 16 VHS, did it on a Toy Story 2 one that we had, and just, like, swapped him round, put it in, and he was like, "Yeah, if you want to give it back to him, just give him that."
What?
But yeah, I've seen that cousin recently, and we were just laughing about it, and I was just thanking him and stuff. I hadn't seen him in a lot of years, and I was just thanking him, like, "Thank you for getting me into wrestling." And if it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't be in the position that I am now, even if I was horrible and swapped the VHS out there.
Did he ever question you about it?
Never.
Wow.
I think after that, he was kind of just like, "Yeah, there you go," and then kind of just forgot about it. Never thought about it. So somewhere out there, if he's giving it away, there's WrestleMania 16, but it's Toy Story 2 instead.
Oh, someone's got that in a collection.
Yeah.
That is in someone's house. That's amazing. and that's a great bit of ingenuity from your dad as well. I like that as well. Is there a memory from you growing up with your family that always will make you smile? Because you say there's been like a rift since then, but like sort of before the things went down, or maybe something after.
I mean, always we used to go on... we don't really... we didn't go on holidays too often when we were younger, just because dad was always working. My dad's a very hardworking person and was always providing for me and my mum and everything, because my mum didn't work at the time, so he was very much like that, and we didn't get to go on holiday very often. But we used to go to Scotland every year, which was quite nice, and I remember I must have been 10, if that, maybe a little bit younger, and he was like, "Come on, we're going up Ben Nevis," and we got up really early one morning, and hiked up Ben Nevis, and I'll never forget that, because it was so amazing. Like, I love being from Yorkshire and stuff. I love the countryside and views and everything, and my dad taking me up there, me, him and my mum, and just being able to look out onto everything was phenomenal. And there was still snow up there and stuff too, and it was awesome. It was so, so good. Yeah, I'd always think about that.
What did your dad do?
My dad he used to be a farmer. And then when my mum had me, couldn't provide on farming money. So he became a tarmacker. So he's like a wagon driver and a tarmacker and stuff. Very much a grafter. Still to this day. Bless him. He's getting old now, though. He's getting old. His bones don't work as well as they should. But he's very good with his hands and stuff. So he's currently, my mum does like glass painting stuff and crafts and things like that. So he's making like loads of boxes and woodwork and woodcraft stuff for for her. So.
They sound like a good team.
They are. When they're not arguing, there's a lot of arguing in our family. But when they work together, it's a dream team. It's a dream team.
What do they kick off about? Just normal family stuff?
Anything. Dad gets a beer out of the fridge. Oh, you're drinking too much. All that kind of stuff and things like that. And yeah.
Pretty standard family. Families, we don't, you can pick your friends, you don't pick the family.
That's true.
And that's just, that comes with it, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I really
it does.
Do. When your dad is working, mm-hmm. originally on the farm and then moved away to other things, before Andrew discovered wrestling, what was Andrew going to do?
Andrew was going to be probably a train driver,
yeah?
A train conductor, an animator, a cartoonist, lots of things. I was into lots of things as a kid, but very much I loved trains. Well, as any white nerd does when they're growing up, love trains and obviously...
How deep did the trains thing go? Train spotting.
Yeah. Went to the National Railway Museum multiple times to the point where the fat controller used to get mad at me at York train station because they had like a Thomas the Tank Engine story time thing. And I used to be so excited that when he was telling stories, I'd get up and like run around like, oh, trains. And Fat Controller was like, yeah, to my mum, like, yeah, you gotta get him out of here, will you?
I love Fat Controller going, oh, what a splendid boy. Yeah. Hey, get him out of here. Ruining my story. How old would you have been then?
I must have been like 4, 5.
Just excited and yeah. Like head full of wonder being at the train museum.
Yeah, and that's what happens as well. Like when I get into something, I really get into it and get very excited about, like almost too excited to the point where I get a little bit giddy and a little bit stupid and end up maybe going a bit too far sometimes. So. Well,
tell me about a time where you've got too into something and you've gone a bit too far.
I mean, even just like on stream and everything, Tom. Because I love talking to the community and everything, and when they're like, yeah, do this, I'm like, yeah, I'll do it, and then they'll be like, no, don't actually do that, and I'll be like, yeah, I'm gonna do it. So I get like, when Adam's dad sent him ball cream for Christmas, Nige pack there, and people were like, yeah, put ball cream on some quality street, and I was like, I'll do it, and they're like, no, don't do it. So I was like, yeah, just stupid stuff like that. Like, I don't know why I do it. I get too excited and then they go a bit far.
You just get swept away in everything that's going on, yeah. I'd imagine. Did you with the train stuff? Can you remember when that sort of fizzled out? Because I used to be into I used to watch Thomas the Tank Engine as a kid, so I get the train thing.
Yeah,
but can you sort of pinpoint when that sort of fizzled out? When like you rode that train ride really high, and then it just sort of burst, and then you weren't bothered anymore.
It must have been around the time I started getting into comic books and stuff and started getting into Spider-Man and old like X-Men comics and things like that, and sort of the train thing fizzled out, and then the love of superhero stuff and the love of illustrating and drawing and things like that, and also video games when I got my first Sega Master System. Sonic the Hedgehog just literally, as you know, just Sonic took over life for a very, very, very long time, and still does to some degree to this day. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's. I think that there's a certain. I think we're quite similar in the sense that, like, it's something that there's things that we loved as a child that will always walk beside us.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think video games definitely is one of them. And you can see that when, you know, you light up when you talk about them.
Yeah.
Which is because then it has been joked about by Ross and such like that, but. Like the origins of coming here weren't necessarily to do with wrestling, which we'll touch on in a bit.
Yeah.
But with your love of video games, when was there a particular game that you remember that you first played that really sort of set your world on fire?
It was Sonic. Was it Sonic? It was the Chaos one on the Master System. It was like Master System 2 though, because we couldn't afford like a proper one, so we got like my cousin Graham at the time wanted an N64, so he sold my mum and dad the Master System 2 so he could afford an N64. But it was Chaos, I can't remember.
It was just called Sonic Chaos, I believe.
I loved it, and I also remember when he was like, yeah, no, if you just switch the console on, it's got Sonic 1 already built into it, and I was like, whoa. no way. And like, that blew my mind. So that and Streets of Rage 2, I think it was amazing. I could never finish those games, though. I'd always be like, Dad, can you do it for me? It's weird how dads back then were like video game masters.
So was your dad a video game master as well?
Yeah, my dad very much, he got me my first PlayStation 1 as well, which just, again, solidified my love for everything Sony and PlayStation. And he got me that more so for himself, because I remember the two games he got were Tomb Raider, obviously for... I think the
Breets.
The Breets.
The Breets.
And the Madonna Breets, the Pixel Breets. And Formula One. And he got like a Mad Cat steering wheel or two. And he loves all his racing stuff. And I'm not a racing fan at all. But he got me them, I think, with the intention of, oh, he'll get bored of these. And then I'll get to play all the stuff.
I'll have them.
I got absolutely hooked on Tomb Raider. And that was it.
Is he quite a young dad, your dad?
No, he's like in his... He must be... I can't even remember. It's pretty bad. I think he's in his 50s now. But yeah. He likes... My dad's awesome because my dad is very much... If I'm into something, he's not one of those people that kind of just like, nah, whatever. Yeah, just let him get on with it. My dad's very much like, let me be invested in that as well because you seem so excited in this. And my dad had quite a few... sort of problems with his own dad, my granddad, and my granddad not being interested in the things that he was into. So I think my dad is like, I want to give my son what I necessarily didn't get. So, which is so sweet. And he's the best. He took me to live events and stuff, like live wrestling events and to gigs in Scotland and everything too. Like, he's just taking me everywhere. He's honestly the best. He's a good man.
So when, like, because when wrestling came along, mm-hmm. like, was did you think this would be just another, oh, I think I'm really into for
a bit,
then
and then I'll just like drop off like a little bit. And I mean, I guess to some extent it was, although that lasted for a longer period of time than some of the other stuff. But that was something else. I remember sitting in the front room when Heat used to be on Channel 4, which helped because we couldn't afford Sky back in the day. So Heat used to be on Channel 4, and me and my dad would sit there on a Sunday afternoon and watch it. And my mum would just be like, oh, you know, that's fake, don't you? It's not real. What do you like this stuff for? And my dad's like, yeah, don't listen to her. It's fine. Like, it's all really cool. Like, Kane's doing all this stuff, all the fire's coming out.
It's blatantly
like,
real, mum. He's bringing all that fire.
Exactly, right?
That real.
Man's burnt to death. He's come back from the brink of death, mum. And my dad, yeah, my dad's just, he's very good at... he gets me excited about the things. Maybe if I've like dropped off something, my dad will be like, oh, how's that going? And I'll be like, yeah, I've not done it in a little bit. And he's like, oh, it was really cool when you did this and this. And he's an incredible man. And
is he invested in what you're doing right now?
Yeah, he loves it. So when the WWE highlight stuff was on Channel 5, he'd watch it every week to see if there was a Cultaholic sign there, which was really sweet of him. And like, I just tell him about everything. And I was like, oh, I'm buzzing for you. And I told him about the chops recently, and he was just laughing his head off. Like, he's just genuinely so happy for me when a lot of my family don't really get what I'm doing. I don't really understand it. Coming from a working class family, they kind of think if you're not working with your hands, if you're not getting sort of dirty or in farming or building or construction or anything like that, it's kind of, what you're doing with your life. But my dad's very much like, just do what you want to do.
Have you had some conversations like that then with your family where you had to kind of explain what you're doing?
A lot.
Justify it.
Yeah, and it sucks when you feel embarrassed by what you do, because I don't think you should be embarrassed by what it is that you love so much. But trying to explain to like my grandma or something like that, like, oh, this is what I do, and I do stuff on camera, or I edit these videos and things like that. And she looks at it, and he's like, yeah, and that's it. And there's no sort of engagement with it and stuff. And
it's I think to a lot of people, and I've had this, I get this a little bit sometimes. It's like, it's a world that isn't known. It's and it's something that, like, we're very lucky, essentially. Mm-hmm. Our hobby is paying the bills.
Yeah.
And that's bizarre to think about.
Exactly.
And so, it's, you know, you kind of, the general consensus in life is that you have a job that you don't like, mm-hmm. so you can spend time doing the things that you love.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we're in that beautiful situation where we're in a job that we love, and it's kind of based on the things that we love.
Exactly.
And that's sometimes quite hard to comprehend. Like the amount, like the conversations I have with my dad about like when I was doing radio stuff, and it was like, oh, you know, when are you going to get a proper job? And it became a joke as time went on, you know, to the fact that like I'll send him a video while I'm doing something on BBC Newcastle. And he'll go, go and get a proper job. You're paying for this now with your license fee. Thanks for that. But yeah, so I get that. And it's a weird one to explain to people. Let's get on to your second match.
Yeah, of course.
Let's dig straight in. So your so we've had the triple threat, the triangle ladder match from WrestleMania 2000. What would you like your second match to be, sir?
So my second match is going to be from a main event of Raw in 2013, February 25th. It's CM Punk versus John Cena, and it's the one where the winner goes on to face a Rock at WrestleMania 29.
Wow. Okay. So this is a deep cut.
It's a deep cut. So at this point, I'd fallen off wrestling big time. I'd sort of for years and years and years, me and my best friend when we were kids, Mark, were like, we wanted to be wrestlers. We had like gym memberships when we were really young, like stupid young. And we go like every week and do CrossFit and stuff. And we're like, we're going to do this. We're going to go to a wrestling school and everything. But unfortunately, where we lived, there was no sort of, there was no sort of wrestling school option and stuff back then. So he sort of went one way, and then I went into like the music stuff and went off and went to college and university to pursue music. And then during that period, I was in my last year, and some of the people that I used to hang out with was like, oh, WrestleMania is coming up. We should watch some wrestling and stuff. And I was like, wow, God, I haven't even thought about wrestling in so long. And we sat down to watch that show, and I remember not really being invested in it at all until that match, and hearing Punk come out to Cult of Personality, which Living Colour and a fantastic band, we were like, ooh, this is cool. And then obviously knowing John Cena, one of my favourites growing up, like when he won the belt at WrestleMania 21 from JBL, like huge moment and stuff. And yeah, that match is top to bottom phenomenal, and I like it even more for the story of Punk being incredibly ill during that match and being backstage and talking to Cena and being like, I don't want to do this. I can't be bothered to do this. Like, I just want to get it over with. And Cena was like, what do you want to do for the match? And Punk's like, I don't know, but all I know is I want to give you a pile driver. And Cena's like, fair enough. And they just went out there and called the whole entire thing. And that blew my mind so much, because it reminded me so much of when me and my friend Mark were kids and we used to wrestle on the trampoline and stuff, and we'd just go and go and go and go and go, and like false finishes and all that kind of stuff happening. It instilled me with the excitement again that I hadn't felt for wrestling since I was a lot younger. And just, yeah, that match from top to bottom, storytelling, how it starts so slow and then builds and builds and builds, the crowd getting behind every single thing that each of them do. They really make that match so much. I think Punk even said in that thing, like, they were the reason that he wanted to keep going in that match too, was because they were just rallying behind it so much. And yeah, just that again, I guess all these matches hold a place where the triangle ladder match is where I started. The sort of this match is where I kind of like dip my toe back in a little bit again. And my third match is where I got fully like back in, but I love this match so much.
It feels like the similarities with all three is that they will be matches that will pull you in.
Yeah.
And like, you know, from the triangle match to this one as well, like it pulled you back in. So you were watching this with friends at uni at this point.
Yeah, at this point, yeah.
Did you reach out to Mark and tell him that you'd watch the wrestling again?
No, me and Mark fell out of touch for a very long time. Like once we sort of both split off to do different things, we'd text every now and then a little bit. But I regret not staying in touch with him. I've only recently like properly got back in touch with him and stuff. We had a call the other weekend and was just talking about wrestling and stuff. He's now in New Zealand doing work there, which is really cool. And I think I should have done, because I think he's also been dipping in and out every now and then, and we've had similar thoughts about certain things. But yeah, I feel like we should have rekindled the old, what was the we had a promotion, the two of us.
Oh, we won
it. HCW, that was it.
What does HCW stand for?
Hardcore Championship Wrestling.
Of course it did.
Come on now.
Okay, so who was in Hardcore Championship Wrestling?
So Mark was the executioner.
Of course.
Mark loved like the Undertaker and people like that. So he was like a bigger guy. He's like taller than me and built a lot. He's a very muscular man, that Mark. and me being just like a skinny white nerd as well.
So who are you then? If he was the executioner, who are you?
I started off as Abel, right?
Kane's brother?
Because I wanted to be in a tag team with Kane called Kane and Abel. You see, that's what he started off as. And because he was all in red, I wanted to be in blue and stuff. But then...
Blue Kane?
Blue Kane, exactly. Green Kane.
The origin
Kane.
Of Blue Kane?
Yeah. So that was that. And then I changed my name to... Something even worse, which was Savage.
My body is ready. Go on.
It was just Savage.
Oh, just that Savage.
It was just Savage.
I thought
you
were going to say, oh, it was
no. And then later on, I was like, oh yeah, Andy Savage.
Andy. Why has nobody thought of Andy Savage?
I don't know.
That's amazing. That's a proper local indie name.
Yeah, it is.
Macho Man Andy Savage. Oh, why has no one done Andy Savage till now?
It could have been the Nacho Man, and I could have come out with one of those nacho sombreros and everything, but no.
The Nacho Man Andy Savage. Did you do an elbow?
I didn't. I did a swanton.
Of course. Randy Savage's favourite move.
Oh, his favourite move of all time. We all remember when he was swantoning people.
I used to love Randy Savage going too extreme.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
Ooh, do. Look at my thong. So that was Miss Elizabeth. I apologize. Got them mixed up. So did you have a belt before we go?
We did. We designed so many because I was into the illustrating stuff. So I'd make multiple belt designs and we'd cut them out and things like that and stick them on bits of cardboard and stuff. And, yeah.
Which champion were you? Was it just the one champion?
It was just the one champ because there was only two of us. There was one championship. Like some of our other friends would get involved, but. It was me and Mark that were fundamentally the absolute mad heads.
Tell me a memory that you and Mark share away from HCW that you always think of.
I've told this story before on stream and stuff, but in year 8, I think towards the end of year 8, I managed to chop my thumb off in a door at school. Just like full on to the knuckle, like came off, got trapped and popped off. And for like that whole entire summer, after I had it stitched back on and stuff, and couldn't really, I wasn't allowed to do anything because if I knocked it, it'd just go whoop and just like pop off again. So what happened was for the whole 8-week period of summer holidays, I'd be super sad about not being able to go out. And we had, what was it, SmackDown versus Raw 2007 or something like that. One of them. It had Cena and Batista on the front of it. And I was really sad that I couldn't play PlayStation with both hands. So I learned to play PlayStation with one hand. And Mark used to come round. I think Mark knew I was sad and stuff. And he used to come round and he was like, yeah, let's just play some games. Let's just sit and play some games. Even on like the nicest days as well. Mark had just come round and the whole entire day we just play wrestling games together. And I think he was going easy on me because I beat him a few times and I think he was being easy on me, but which I appreciate as well. I think he saw that I was a bit upset about not being able to go out and do stuff. And that was really nice. We've been to wrestling shows together and stuff as well. Like our dads took us to our first WWE live event, which was Summer Bash, where we got to see like Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio go at it. And the main event, Tom, the main event.
Go on.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
John Cena, Kurt Angle, JBL in a triple threat match for the WWE Championship with Stone Cold Steve Austin as special guest ref.
What? Where was this?
I was in Manchester in 2005 or something like that. A long time ago. It was a
we
house
don't
show.
Know how good we had it.
I know, we really
we
did.
We really don't know
we
how
really
good we had
did.
It.
We really did. Like, back then as well, it was insane, like, to think that I've seen Eddie Guerrero live, had the opportunity to do that, and with Rey Mysterio as well, like, them two going at it is... Very lucky.
That's
very
amazing.
Lucky. Yeah.
It's a hell of a main event.
Really? Yeah, it really is.
What spurred you to get back in touch with Mark recently?
I think, well, he sort of messaged me. I think the pandemic kind of made me realize that I should keep in contact with people a lot more. I feel like I've fallen out of touch with people quite a lot because inherently I am quite a shy and reserved person, and I feel like I'm annoying people if I message them out of the blue and stuff. And often, for example, now that I've moved, I've definitely fallen out of contact with a lot of people just because I feel like I don't want to bother them, or if I've left it too long, I don't want to seem like I'm coming back for wanting something or trying to stay in contact with people just because. I think he messaged me first, and we were just talking about, he just messaged me something random about the wrestling, and I think he was like, oh, I've seen you're on a YouTube channel thing now, talking about wrestling and stuff. So we just like back and forth through that, which was, it's really nice that wrestling's come full circle and brought a lot of things back for me, which has been really nice.
You've talked about sort of coming from sort of working class roots. What was the vibe about you going to university?
Good, because yeah. I think I might have been the first in the, especially my dad's side of the family for sure, the first going to uni. So everyone was super proud, super excited. It was for music, so they might not have been too proud, because I'm sure they would have wanted something a bit more like business or something like that. But yeah, pride. My mum was very proud of me, no matter how many times I wanted to quit when I was there. And yeah, there was a lot of pressure for sort of finishing and then getting straight into a job and stuff like that, which unfortunately I wasn't able to find in music, especially around the area that I lived in and stuff.
Because that's the thing, when you go and you, it's not just a case of, I think people still now go into the system and don't realize this, like when you go into like a media course where mm-hmm. like it's not just a case of, okay, you're finished and here's your music job.
Yeah.
Okay, you finished your 3 years of music and here's your guitar, you're off to work for Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
Like it's not like an entry level into Metallica.
No.
It's just like you have to, once you come out, it gives you, those 3 years give you the fundamentals, and if you have the initiative to find your own way, then you will. But it gives you the groundwork
definitely
to get that started. It's not, it doesn't mean like, because I had a conversation with somebody recently and they said they just finished their degree in radio production and they're like, now what do? I said, well, now you get a job in radio.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it's almost like that level isn't taught there. You've got to have that instinct yourself.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Like I'd even go so far to argue that, I mean, where I went to Manchester Metropolitan University, and the music course was in Crewe, which is not the music, it's not a music, it's not a booming music central hub.
Nobody thinks Crewe.
No, nobody thinks Crewe.
Crewe is a train station.
It's a nice train station. Around the train station, apparently.
It was a satellite town.
Yeah, it was one of the, I think, from what I've heard, it's one of the very few places where the train station was there first and then the town got built around it.
If you don't want to live in Wrexham or Stoke, come live in Crewe.
It was dire, and I would even go to argue that the fundamentals weren't even there for us. The course itself was very much like, do this research file because this is going to get you far in life. Never used a research file again in my life. Like things like that. Like we'd have people come in and speak about stuff, which was probably like the most informative things that we could have asked for, because it's actual people that have gone out and done things and been like, yeah, go this direction. But the things that they taught you, fundamentally, I've personally never used again in life and stuff like that. And it felt like a waste in some way, but then again, it didn't, because I met some incredible people and went on to do really fun things. Like when I left, I think more than anything, staying on to do university, your willpower is strengthened to keep going. And then I remember after university, because I wanted to get into composing music for video games and stuff, I just put loads of my music on forums, like video game forums and stuff, and started writing music for mobile games and things like that, just freelance because I wanted some experience and stuff, and that didn't really lead to anything. And then I got into a few bands and stuff, and we did pretty well. We did multiple tours. One of the bands, the last band that I was in, we got on Radio 1, which was really cool. Like, wasn't even told about it until someone messaged us being like, oh yeah, fine, you're on BBC Radio 1. I'm like, what?
just randomly playing on Radio 1?
Just randomly, and which was insane.
Is that like through BBC introducing?
It wasn't even through introducing. It was like, I think Hugh Stevens or something had heard it and was like, yeah, just put that on the
stick
thing.
Them on.
And like, which was insane to us. But even then, stuff like that doesn't guarantee you a career in things like that. Even though when you're younger, that you'd think, oh, if I get on there, that's it. Like, everything opens up. Like, the music and the arts industry is tough, and you've got to have a lot of resiliency and you're going to go through a lot of heartbreak, a lot of rejection, a lot of just really putting your knuckles in and just trying to work as hard as you possibly can to make something work. And sometimes, unfortunately, it doesn't. But I think if you're incredibly, incredibly passionate about it, you'll just keep going until you will eventually get there, get some semblance of success, at least success in terms of what you might view it as, you know.
It's the way to look at it is that these courses like this will give you a jetpack, but you have to get the rocket fuel for it. You have to then use that accordingly.
Without a doubt, yeah.
And you mentioned that your mum had talked you out of quitting uni a few times.
Yeah.
Was there a few occasions that you went, oh, I just don't want to be here anymore?
There was a few, like, growing up and even still to this day, very much have self-doubt, a lot of mental health anxieties and stuff like that. And I remember in the first year of university, it took me 6 months to make friends or to talk to anybody because I was super shy and just coming from there was other people in the same situation, coming from just a small country town to this big, everybody's there, everybody's in the same boat, though, you have to remember that. But it was very tough. It was very tough, but I was thankful in that people sort of took me in a little bit and were very accommodating and very nice to me and helped me come out of my shell quite a bit. But yeah, my mum was like, you got to stay, because once you get that piece of paper, that's it, you can do anything. And to some degree, yeah. I mean, that's true. If there's something there, people look at you a bit more like, okay, well, they've done this at least. Mm. So, you know, they've got the willpower to do something, and then maybe that'll apply to this job and such. And yeah, my mum very much talked me out of it. My dad was kind of like, if you've got something planned and you want to do it, you do you. Just make sure you're happy. My mum and dad are very parallel in that sense. My mum's very much like, you got to keep at it, you got to do it. My dad's like, look, enjoy what you want to enjoy, enjoy what you do, but make sure you're happy doing it at the same time.
Well, as you say, like, your dad's come from a place where, like, his dad didn't really give that much interest or encouragement to what he was doing, so he's kind of doubling down.
Yes, definitely.
With you. And I think it's nice, it's kind of nice you've got that parallel with your mum being very pragmatic and, like, just get the thing done.
Yeah.
And your dad being like, just do whatever makes you happy. Mm-hmm. That's a nice contrast to come by. It's interesting to hear you talk about, like, you suffer from self-doubt and anxiety and such like that, because I think a lot of people who will see you on a Monday will just see the 4-year-old Andrew that's running around the fat controller.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's easy to forget that, like, we're people behind it.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time we put those, because you have to appreciate, like, we're, you know, away from it all. It's great that we all hang out, but when you do those streams, we're entertaining.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to, even when you have those days when you don't want to be there, you sort of Pagliacci face it and you do it. And it's interesting to hear you talk about stuff like self-doubt. And where do you think that comes from with you? Because there always has to be a starter cap for something like that.
Yeah, I guess, I think ever since I was young, especially at school and stuff, people, you go to a parents' evening and things like that, and they're like, yeah, he's very good, he'll go on to do amazing things, and that puts a lot of pressure on you. I'm not incredibly smart, I don't think I'm incredibly talented either and stuff like that, and it put a lot of pressure on me, and then I just overthink it a lot, and then, like, I can't do this. I know I can do it. I know I can apply myself to it and do it, but I want to do the best of what I can do. And I don't know if that matches up to what other people sort of perceive and stuff. So I get very, I just doubt myself a lot. And recently I've just been going through a lot of things in my head to the point where I was like, I don't know if I can stream anymore. I was having panic attacks walking home from work. Like the other week, my legs stopped working on the way home. I had to sit on a wall and be like, okay, I gotta calm down and stuff. And
can you remember what caused that?
I not a clue. Again, just recently, like, I feel much better now, by the way. Like, lots of things have happened in the last few weeks. But I think thinking I'm just not good enough. There's so many people in the office, like outside. Dan, incredibly talented. Owen, incredibly talented. Behind the scenes, Luke, everybody. And they are so hardworking and such wonderful, wonderful people. And I'm just a guy from a small town that's come into this in 2 years and is not incredibly talented or gifted. And sometimes I feel like I've waltzed in and somehow I've just been given this when I don't necessarily deserve it. And I feel like everybody else deserves their time to shine because they deserve it more than anything.
Why don't you deserve yours?
Just because I feel like sometimes I just haven't put the work in, even though deep down I know I've put the work in. But to me, I'm just like, I see other people's work that they've done and I'm like, they are so good. I'm not that good, you know? I'm not going to cry.
Too late, mate. I think what you have to understand is this, I had to learn this because I was in a similar situation to you when I started.
Yeah.
And I get where all this comes from. Because you're joining an established core of people in a high stakes business, which is very much driven on personality and character and such. And yeah, I often refer to myself as the fifth Beatle.
Yeah.
Because that's come when I joined when it was a much smaller team. Mm. That's how it felt. You know, it was four, used to be five, then it's four, and then I'm there, and it's, you measure everything.
Yeah.
Against what everyone else is doing. And you have to reach a point where you go, I'm not being given this out of sympathy.
Yeah.
And I had to realize that, and people helped me realize that. And I say the same to you, boss, that nothing that you've been given is out of sympathy. Hmm. It's being given because the people involved believe that you're the right person to do it. There's no, it's not like a let's do Andrew a favor. If, you know, to make it uber blunt, like you joined, and we'll talk about how you joined in a bit, but like you joined to edit. Mm-hmm. And then opportunities came up where you ended up doing some bits on camera. And I remember Adam telling me, saying, I want to do more stuff with Andrew on camera. I was like, brilliant, do it. And that's not done out of sympathy. That's not done out of, let's just do him a favor. Because, you know, make it blunt, if you were crap, you'd have just been editing.
Yeah.
And the fact that the first news video back in front of cameras, it was like, well, it's you and Andrew. I was like, I wouldn't have it any other way. Wouldn't have it any other way. You know, and I know you were nervous about that. Mm. And you know, and I message at you, and it's different when you write it.
Yeah.
Because you know, all the times we've worked together on stuff, because we first worked together, you were editing stuff for me, then we did videos together, and then we did news together, and I always reach out and tell you, and I don't say it if I don't think it, you know, and I think you're incredible at what you do. You have a skill set that will outlast many people here, myself included. You genuinely do.
That's so kind of you.
You genuinely do.
You've been incredible in helping me feel very welcome and in teaching me so much stuff since being on camera. And you've been nothing but nice ever since we did like graded and stuff together. You've been so wonderful and you've helped me through a lot when I've been feeling incredibly anxious being on camera. Same for Adam and Sam and Ross and Jack. Everybody has just made me feel so welcome and,
less
and
so, Jack.
At ease.
I'm kidding.
Stealing my hat gimmick. What's he doing? No, everybody's been so kind and accommodating, and I know I can be difficult to work with.
When?
Sometimes.
When? Just when? Just when? Like, when?
Just
when?
When I'm.
I when get, have
I
you
get
been difficult
nervous
to work
and awkward
with?
And then sometimes I know when? I'm not the easiest to bounce off, man.
Jesus, when? God damn it. When have you been difficult? Tell me a single time. You are the least difficult person. You are the least difficult person. And I've worked with Ellie Goulding.
Whoa.
And you are the least difficult person I've ever worked with. You are the opposite to that. You are the opposite. You are the most accommodating person that I've ever worked with. You're someone like, and I know that's not easy. And that a part of that, I think part of that is driven from this, and it's awful because I get it, because it's driven from this feeling of not being good enough. So therefore, you've got to always be on, always be there, always be ready. Because if I'm not, they're just going to, you know, and that's drilled into you. And that comes back to like getting out into the industry and the music industry and stuff like that. It's drilled into you that if you're not there at this time, well, there's a million that's of you, it. Off you go.
Yeah.
And that's drilled into you from the very top. And it sucks because whilst it does give you that mentality of I want to strive for greatness, it doesn't do a lot for your self-confidence.
No,
when someone says, if you don't do it, there'll be other people that will. It's like, well, but then that's the thing.
Yeah.
If you left here tomorrow, there are people here that couldn't do what you do.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's true. That's how it goes.
You're so kind.
It's true, and I mean it. I don't mean to shout. But you're not difficult.
Thank you.
I don't like you looking down that microphone and going, I know I've been difficult. You haven't been difficult. You're the least difficult. Are the undifficult. You make it ridiculously easy.
I'm
ridiculously
glad.
Easy.
Thank you. You do too.
Bless you. It's not about me. It's about the fact I've tangented a little bit. I'm drinking out of a Triple Jump mug. That's deliberate.
You are.
That's the deliberate device.
Oh, okay.
Because the whole, like, you're doing stuff with Cultaholic, that was not originally the plan, was it?
No. And I know people are going to get at me for this as well.
Oh, Sodom. Absolutely Sodom. Absolutely Sodom.
I was a huge fan of the stuff at What Culture, with both the wrestling side and Ben and Peter doing, it wasn't called Worst Games ever then, it was called S
Games for W's.
For W's, yes, it was. And I used to sit at my then ex-girlfriend's flat, and I would sit and watch them for hours and hours and hours and hours, and I would be like, I want to do this. I don't know how I can do this. I don't know what to do, but this is the best thing I've ever seen, and I want to do this. And everybody, Adam, Sam, Ross, Jack, Ben, Peter, became my idols and something that I don't really watch TV anymore. It would be all the stuff on YouTube constantly. Whenever they bring something out, that was it. I was like on it straight away. And eventually in 2018... I was working at Tesco, and I'd been working there for like 4 years at that point. I was like, I'm never going anywhere else. I'm never doing anything else. I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do with life. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I saw, obviously, by this point, the boys had broken off and formed Cultaholic. And on the off chance, I was like, let's just have a look around for jobs and stuff. I quit my job at Tesco and got into a bit of a depressive funk and didn't know what I wanted to do. And then I was like, let's just have a look. And then on the off chance, went on the website, looked at the job listing, video editor, freelance video editor, never edited before in my life. And I was like, well, what's harm in trying? So I applied. And at that point, I was thinking, I think Triple Jump had just joined the Cultaholic umbrella.
Mm.
And I was like, well, I wonder if, because if it's just Ben and Peter, I wonder if down the line, they'll need someone to like jump on over and help edit videos for them and stuff. And I applied for Cultaholic first. Then a few weeks later came the Ben and Peter putting out the Triple Jump, like, we're looking for video editors. And I was like, that's it, right. I'm going for that one as well. So I sent a little snippet, sent that back, and I didn't hear anything. That must have been like January or something, January, February of 2019 at that point, and didn't hear anything back until March, April of 2019. And I was with my band at that point, didn't have any money because I wasn't working. We were doing like a little tour. So I was running out of money, like getting paying for petrol and stuff and not really getting anything back from that. And we were in Birmingham and we just parked up and I got an email from Sam being like, do you want to do some freelance stuff? And in that moment, I was like, yes, done. Like, everything else is done. I don't want to... Sounds bad, but at that point, I was so burnt out with the music stuff. I was like, don't want to do the music stuff. I just want to edit. And that's what I want to focus on. And that's what I want to get good at. So I said yes. And then I remember a few months down the line, maybe 2 months or something, Adam messaged me and was like, do you want to move up and have full-time position? And I remember asking him, would I be able to work with Triple Jump as well? Because I really like video games and stuff and I'd like to help out if I can. And Adam was like, I'm sure down the line there's going to be something for you to do. Because apparently, from what Sam, I think, has told me, I was considered for both jobs. I think Ben's told me you were so close to being a part of Triple Jump, but then Sam was like, nah, we're having him. So that is the reason why I'm here. But thankfully, I've gotten to work with the Triple Jump guys. I've gotten to do streams for them. I did some streams for them over Christmas period. I edited their every WWE game ranked from worst to best, which is one of my favorite things I've ever done working here. And yeah, it's been really nice to sort of just work with both teams and be able to be close to those guys too. Thankfully, we work in like the same offices, so it's easy just to like see them and stuff. And they've been nothing but accommodating as well. It's been a surreal experience because to me, I'm still very much a fan of all of this stuff.
Mm.
And I'm still very much a fan of everything that you've done, everything Adam, like Ben, Peter, everybody has done. So to like hang out with you guys now, I remember in the first 6 months, I was deathly afraid that I was going to get fired. I was like, I'm going. After that 6 months, they'll be like, you're working too slow, you're gone.
But, do you think they thought you weren't quick enough on the draw?
I mean, at that point, I'd been editing for what, like a few months? So
wow.
I was scared that I was so slow and so inexperienced that they just chucked me out.
But what does that say to you in terms of like your ability and your and the impression that you left, that if you'd only been doing it for a few months and you were a part of an established company full time and...
Well, my thought was, they're just low on people, so keep me on for a little bit. And the thing is, like, I try to get better every time. I try and stay behind later to get edits finished because I didn't want to disappoint anybody and I wanted to prove to people that I could do it.
Mm.
And thankfully, doing that helped me improve as well.
Yeah.
That's all I ever want to do. I want to get better at what I'm doing because I know, especially on camera stuff, I'm not incredibly articulate with my words and things and I get confused and I get muddled. This Yorkshire tongue doesn't help with the accent and stuff. And I want to do people proud and I just want to get better at my craft and I want to make everybody, I know you can't make everybody happy, but I want to make as many people happy as I can because you guys have done that for me. And I want to do that for other people too. So...
How did you come to end up doing stuff in front of the camera? Can you remember the first conversation?
I think Adam just messaged me and was like, do you want to do Twitch? And he was like, it's just to break up sort of the days and stuff. And part of me feels like he's very blasé. We've like chatted before, but I feel very close to Adam now. And we've chatted before and I've said like, thank you so much for everything. And he's always like, yeah, it's nothing. But like, I think he knew... When we were in quarantine, a lot of people in the office were alone, but a lot of people were in relationships and got to spend quarantine with people. And I was very lonely during quarantine and very sad and stuff. And I think Adam knew that and was like, do you want to break up your week by doing streams and stuff? And I was like, I would love to do that because that was another thing I always wanted to do was stream on Twitch and play games and stuff. I get to play games and talk to people. Like, yes, please. That sounds awesome. And then, yeah, from there, just did the Twitch stuff for a little bit. And then Adam messaged me and was like, I think we're going to put you on news. And I was panicking like mad. I was like, oh, my God. And that might have been in October of last year. And he was like, yeah, around Christmas time, we'll get you on. Literally a week later, he was like, you're on your first news. And I was like, whoa, what? And
there's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It threw me in at the deep end, but I'm kind of glad he did because it didn't give me time to overthink stuff. Kind of just like push me in there.
It's better that way sometimes. I think if he told you a month out, you're going to do news at the end of this month,
I'd have been overthinking it for a whole entire month and it just would have been a disaster.
It's sometimes better just the case, you know, that to just go, right, tomorrow you're doing that. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, that's fine. away we go. How did you feel going into your first Twitch stream? How did you feel after your first Twitch stream?
First Twitch stream, very nervous, incredibly nervous, but so accommodating. I know it's a cliche for people to say we have the best community in wrestling YouTube, or just the best community on YouTube. We genuinely do. The people there that keep coming back, that keep supporting you every single week and saying wonderful things, genuinely feel so much like friends now, and they helped me feel so comfortable. And I wouldn't, if it wasn't for Twitch, if it wasn't for the community, I wouldn't have met my wonderful girlfriend as well, Joanne. She was in the first stream. Would never have thought things would be where they are now.
So how did that progress then? If you don't mind me asking.
Just like started talking. Like, she was very kind in that when I'd finish a stream, she'd message and be like, awesome stream and stuff. And then we just started talking. We both love video games. So she was like, do you know anything about PlayStation trophies? Because we just like getting trophies, which sounds so nerdy, but we like that stuff. And we just swap like, yeah, this game's good for getting this and this and this and this. And then we just got to knowing each other, started playing games together on PlayStation over quarantine and stuff. And yeah, things just sort of like blossomed from there.
So you sort of got to know each other during lockdown.
Yeah.
So when did you first meet?
It was in April, towards the end of April of this year. It was the first time, and it was amazing. It was like the first time being out of Newcastle in a year, being sort of cooped up, not cooped up, but not being able to do as many things as we could, going out and her being like the first person that I saw, that I got to hug and stuff. Insane. So cool.
Had you sort of made your relationship official before you'd met, or was it a case of you chatted a lot and then you got together and you went, oh, this is a thing?
Kind of. There was some other circumstances and stuff as well that I won't get into on the podcast and stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, we very much met each other and I think we both knew there was something there. Yeah. And then, yeah, like this last week, we managed to be able to solidify it. Like, circumstances came together and, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Tell me something about Joanne that you especially love.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, there's so much stuff. How supportive she is through everything, even when she didn't have to be. She could have just been like, this guy's putting too much stuff on me, he's sad, he's whatever, like, nah, go away. But she was very much incredibly supportive and got me through a lot of stuff. With my grandma passing away this year, She was there down the mic for that, and not necessarily talking about that directly, just making sure I was okay and taking my mind off it. She's incredibly kind and thoughtful and generous and selfless in everything that she does. She just wants to make sure that I'm happy, and I just want to do nothing more than like to give all that back to her again. She makes the days so much better. She really does.
We've got one more match to get to.
We do.
Which is, but before we do, we're bringing this back for those who listen to Desert Island Grapps and go, you haven't done it in a while. We're bringing it back. So as well as taking three wrestling matches, you're also allowed to take with you a movie,
yes,
an album,
ooh,
and a luxury item.
Ooh.
What would you like your movie to be, Andrew?
I'm going to take with me. I was thinking like, do you know what? It'll be like a Spider-Man or something like that because I love those films. But something that I feel like I've adapted from work, from watching these films so much, I'm going to take Chicken Run with me, Tom.
Yeah! I knew you'd say Chicken Run!
Yes!
I just knew! And I'm so happy that you did! I knew you'd say Chicken Run. Mel Gibson's finest hour.
Well, we'll forget about him, but...
What is it about Chicken Run that you love the boat? Is it the Yorkshire thing?
It's the Yorkshire thing, right?
Is it
right?
The Yorkshire pride thing again?
Because I could have gone with Wallace and Gromit, because that was obviously where like animation and stuff solidified itself for me. But I wanted to go with Chicken Run because it's something that I watched so much as a kid. And I wanted to be an animator when I was younger. And I wanted to work for Aardman. And I wanted to do all these different kinds of things. And I think my love of animation really stems from that film, the way everything works, like the big set pieces with the with like the meat pie machine and stuff, and I was always like baffled, how does that work, how do people do that in stop motion? And my love of animation carries over to the job now. Like, I get to animate in videos, silly things, very silly things, but I'm grateful that I got into animation through that, through like the slapstick kind of stuff, like the Aardman stuff, to be able to apply it to that. But yeah, very much like the Yorkshireness of it. Mr. Tweedy just reminding me of my dad. Mrs. Tweedy reminding me of my mum a little bit. Just like my mum always like, oh, I'll give over, just like slapping him. Well, she doesn't slap him. Let's make that clear. There's no domestic violence in our household. But
she's always cooking chicken pies.
Always cooking chicken pies.
And normally in a really ruthless manner.
Yes, definitely. With giant like spiked things. I don't know what that was.
I love the imagery of like an Aardman thing like that. I think the one thing that they love doing with Nick Park and such love doing is animating a giant machine. Mm-hmm. You can see that there is that rustic love for it every single time.
And it still baffles me to this day how they do it. I still don't understand how they do stuff like raindrops in stop motion. Ooh. I don't know why that doesn't like click in my head. Like, how do you do that? Because it's in stop motion. How is that thing? It baffles me and it intrigues me so much. And I'd love to get into that kind of, into the weeds of that a little bit more.
If anybody's watching that can help that, then
please,
why not?
Please
do. Do it.
How does rain work in stop motion films?
Explain in comment sections everywhere. How about an album? What album would you take?
I would take with me. I was thinking about this as well. I was like, would I take something that would make me feel like at home and stuff? And I was like, should I take Bon Iver's first album? But no, I'm going to go for my favorite album of all time. I'm going to go for In Utero by Nirvana.
Okay, so why is this one your favorite of all time?
Because this one was the turning point in the music stuff for me, Tom.
Okay.
I used to love bands, still do like bands, like Guns N' Roses and things when I was younger. Like, oh yeah, whiskey and stuff, that's cool. But then I grew out of that quite quickly, and Nirvana opened my eyes to this whole other world of alternative music. Like, growing up, and the obviously from Yorkshire, like the hair metal stuff doesn't really, the how can I put it, like the aesthetic and stuff doesn't really apply to the Yorkshire stuff. And
no, it's not fitting with Yorkshire, is it?
Whereas Nirvana and the whole grunge and the whole alternative scene back in the 90s kind of felt a little bit like home, in that there was loads of other bands along with us that we're trying to get somewhere and trying to make it, and we go and support everybody's band and stuff, and we do all this stuff. And Nirvana just was the hub of finding out about the Pixies and the Melvins and other bands, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, all those kinds of bands, Green River and everything. And they just, to this day, I can listen to that album over and over and over and over again. I can't do that with very many albums because you get sick of it after a bit. You've heard the same songs, like, ugh. But that album, it's got just songs that are really melancholy and a little bit sad and stuff, and then you got ones that are just sheer brute force, like Dave Grohl's just pounding the drums and stuff, and Kurt's screaming his head off, and I love that so much. I love the contrast. I like bands that can do heavy, and I like bands that can do just the, like, the sort of the soulful songs, the songs that mean something, and they can really strike a chord in you, just like music on a guitar. Whoa.
Best song on In Neutro.
Scentless Apprentice, the drum beat.
Straight in there.
Gabble, dabble, boop, gabble. So good. So good. That's like the best drum beat of all time ever. It's amazing.
Would that been Dave Grohl on them?
So? Yeah, it was. Yeah. So from Nevermind, I think it might have been on some things on Incesticide as well, because it was Chad Channing on drums in Bleach. And then, yeah, Dave's proper studio debut, I think, was Nevermind. And yeah.
So it would have been a Dave Grohl drum action.
So good.
A luxury item, sir.
This one's tough, because I'd like to take my guitar with me, but could I give up video games, Tom? I don't think I could.
I don't know if you could, to be honest.
I'm going to die on Vita Island. I'm going to die on PlayStation Vita Island, a console that's been forgotten to time, Tom.
Now, I've heard you bigging up the PlayStation Vita in the office on multiple occasions.
Honestly.
Why do you think the Vita has just been lost in the vortex?
Just because I feel like not a lot of studios supported it so much. You get people like Drinkbox, who did Guacamelee and stuff, really like applied the workings, the physical attributes of the PS Vita to their games. So you get like the touch screen stuff in 7 and everything. I don't think a lot of people did that. People were just like, oh, they just port stuff to it and it's blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just not as good as a Nintendo handheld or something like that. And it's like a PS3, Tom. A tiny PS3 in your hands, and you've got the whole back catalogue of PS1 stuff, PS2 stuff, PSP stuff, on top of all the awesome Vita games. Like, you got Persona 4 Golden and things like that, and Freedom Wars and stuff. And, like, I don't know why it gets lost to time. And now if PlayStation made a Vita 2, granted, it probably wouldn't do as well because just of the Switch and PS5 and everything. Like, I think, again, it would just get forgotten. But if you can get a Vita off eBay, I got one recently for Joanne because she loves Persona, and I was like, you got to get this. And I got very drunk one night, forgot I'd ordered it, and then a Vita turned up at the office, and I was like, that's something I did. But it's a phenomenal console that still stands the test of time. And you can get a PSTV, plug it into your TV, and then play with a controller and stuff.
Switch for a Switch.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's basically it. And the Switch is awesome. I love the Switch so much. But there was something, like, magical about the Vita before, obviously, the Switch and stuff came out. Like, I will die on Vita Island forever.
I like how every time you say a Vita, I keep thinking, don't cry for me, Argentina.
I thought you meant like a Bell Vita. I just think of biscuits.
Oh,
all the time.
Biscuits for breakfast. I mean, do you think it's the format, maybe? Because I know PSP had those weird sort of discs.
The UMD discs.
Yeah. Do you think, and then is the Vita smaller discs?
Vita's just got little cartridges, kind of like a Switch now.
Right. Okay. I just wondered whether or not, because obviously the PSP, I think the format was what put people off.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what.
Carrying around these giant discs all the time.
Like, you know. But then if they're like mini SD card-esque things, then that seems more palatable.
And much better. And like I said, there's so much stuff on the store. That you don't even necessarily need to get Vita games because you've got so much of a back catalogue. People always talk about, like, oh, I wish this was backwards compatible. I wish I could play this, and this.
You've got loads anyway.
Play it. You can literally play it on the Vita.
Yeah.
So go for it. Go get a Vita.
Go get a Vita.
Do it.
I remember when the PSP... I seem to think the PSP came out around the same time as the Nokia N-Gage.
I feel like around about that same time.
And I love the Nokia N-Gage because all the games were on SIM cards.
They
had to take the battery out of the N-Gage. to put the game in and then put the battery back in. It was perfectly fine.
So good.
And then people whinged about the Vita.
Yep.
Like you could yep. That's what we had. That's what we had. Your third and final match, sir.
My third and final match is the one that solidified me getting back into wrestling, Tom. And it's a bit of Brit rest.
Ooh.
From WWE though. Okay. It's a bit of Pete Dunne versus Tyler Bate for the UK Championship at TakeOver Chicago.
Amazing choice.
So good. And this was the match that, just on the off chance, I remember getting I got the network back because I wanted to watch a WrestleMania. Mm. And I was like, yeah, go on then. I'll just see what's on there. And weirdly enough, that was one of the recommended matches that popped up. And I was like, yeah, go on then. Didn't know who they were. No idea they were two British wrestlers. And that was when I was like, wrestling's like this now? Like wrestling is stiff strikes. Wrestling's like classic but flippy but brutal at the same time. And that blew my mind that wrestling could be like that. And those two guys being from England too, I was like, that's awesome. And being so young. Because Tyler's, what, 20 at that time?
Yeah, he's still no age and he's amazing.
Yeah, and that baffled me as well that someone that young from the UK could do that, because that's what me and Mark wanted to do when we were kids. We were like, that could have been us back in the day, but we didn't have like the resources and stuff to be able to do that. And the attitude of Pete Dunne, I love just like his swag, how just hard hitting he was with the strikes, how inventive they were with their counters and everything. Like there's the part where Tyler Bate goes to do like a run in, stand in, shooting star press, and Pete Dunne just locks in the triangle lock. And I'm like, that is so cool. I'd never seen anything like that before. And being invested, that might have been like the first time I was really invested in the more technical Brit wrestling style of stuff. And that opened a whole other door for me to go back and watch loads of progress stuff and then find out about more indie people like Tommy End and Dave Mastiff and people like that, and the whole British Strong style thing as well. And the crowd in that match chanting UK, they're just two young people from Britain, from working class backgrounds, and there's a whole arena of people chanting, this is awesome, UK, fight forever. And I kind of like, and again, not often proud of Britain, that makes you proud of Britain, which is a weird thing to say. But I don't always feel comfortable saying that for just because of some things that's happened.
Yeah, because there's so much to not be proud about. With yeah. The way, and you know, you only have to look on Twitter during a European Championship
yes.
to see the bits of Britain that we shouldn't be proud
yeah,
of.
Yeah, exactly. But those two, you're like, wow, they tore the house down. I think that was the best match of that whole entire pay-per-view as well. Like, everybody was so invested in it. Mm. Everybody was so invested in both Dunne and Tyler Bate. And they just pulled everything out. And some things you're like, did they just do that on the fly? Like, Pete Dunne going to do an X-Plex, but then right at the last minute, turning it into a powerbomb. Which, like, just that sort of the quick thinking made it feel even more real as well. Mm. I remember showing my mum Pete Dunne that match, and she was like, it reminded her of when grandma would sit and watch like the big guys tangle up and stuff, but then she'd see like Pete Dunne pull at the fingers and she'd be like, no, don't want that. not all about that. And my dad being like, oh no, I don't like that Tyler Bate guy, he's just like, he's so nice. And that reminded me of back in the day when grandma was like, good guys, bad guys, the good guy get the bad guy. And my mum's there like, oh, he's a bad guy, that Pete Dunne. Tyler Bate, he's so much of a good guy. Like, it brought back a lot of memories, and it's my love for both of those wrestlers now, for getting me back into wrestling proper, is insane. I love Pete Dunne so much. It's unreal. And that match, if you've not seen that match, that is a match you really need to go back and watch, because it stands the test, even though it's not that old, it still stands the test of time. It's amazing.
It's nice that as we're talking about this, we're about maybe a week or so ahead before, they do it again. They've got Volta and Dragunov representing NXT UK at SummerSlam Takeover Weekend show, providing, you know, all's gone well. We're like, you know, late behind the curtain on day of recording.
Yeah.
We've just done a video that's saying SummerSlam might be in the bin.
Yep.
So as it stands, it's still happening, but we'll see. But it's just nice that we talk about that with the
with that
on the horizon,
and that and Dragunov and Walter's first match that they had together as well.
It was phenomenal,
unbelievable. We've spoken about this before on news and stuff, but I think there's a lot of people sleeping on NXT UK, and I get that there's a lot of backlash because they're taking up all the UK indie people and stuff, and it's not really good for the indie scene in the UK. But they are putting on so many good matches that people aren't witnessing.
There's a high quality of wrestling on that show.
The women's roster is the best roster in WWE at the moment, hands down. Even the men's, like the people that they've got there, unbelievable. And they pull it out of the bag every single week. NXT UK is great because it's like a 50-minute, one-hour show, and it's just matches. Like, there's a little bit of story stuff in there, which helps develop the storylines further. There's not too much of it, though. It's just solid wrestling, and I like that so much. I feel like we get too many segments on Raw and stuff these days, and it's nice just to get straight to the meat and potatoes of it.
And that's what AEW is selling Rampage as. Like, an hour of solid wrestling, little bit of storyline peppered in, but mainly wrestling.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly the way to go. I think there's a call for wrestling shows that aren't bloated messes.
Yeah.
Call me old-fashioned. You know, I like a wrestling show that's like 45 minutes long. That's nice.
And that's it.
I can watch it while I'm making dinner,
because it's so hard, even though we obviously cover all this on the channel and stuff, like, it's hard to keep up with that that much wrestling because they're so long, and when a show isn't good, we still have to get through it because we still need to know what's going on, and it can be such a slog. But NXT UK never feels like a slog, and please also go back and watch like the NXT UK title tournament from way back in the day where they were fighting, like Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate fighting for the belt, and then Tyler Bate wins it. That match is phenomenal as well. So much good stuff. Tommy End and Pac on Neville at the time.
They have themselves a little dust
they
up,
did
didn't they, in Blackpool,
which was awesome. And yeah, I just feel like a lot of people are sleeping on it. I've said it multiple times, but there's so much stuff to go back on the network, go back to the network on and watch so many incredible matches that you might not have even thought were a thing, but they are.
Where can people find Andrew online?
You can find Andrew online at Andrew_John with four N's at the end, because I still haven't figured out this whole Twitter handle thing yet.
It's catchy.
On Twitter, yeah, it certainly is. You can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/cultaholic on a Monday at 6 PM, where we just play games and chat most of all. And that's pretty much me, yeah.
2 years ago we met, first time you walked into the office, you were sat at the other end of the office.
Mm-hmm.
And every single time, you were the brightest person that walked into that office every single day.
Thank you.
Myself not counted.
Because it was the same for me going in and seeing you sat there.
Always with a smile, always happy to be there, a little bit of Yorkshire banter, and then you crack on with your day. And I love the fact that that was 2 years ago and we're sat here now, and you have come along such a long way.
Thank you.
And it's difficult when... because I get it. It's difficult when you have what seems to be like imposter syndrome and anxiety and that feeling of self-doubt. And me just sitting here and saying, you're great. It doesn't sink in. Like, it goes about that low. So I'm not going to end this by wishing you well. I'm going to end this by saying, I hope one day you realize how good you are.
Thank you.
I hope one day you do. If you could, the final question would be... you mentioned there how your last match sort of harkens back to you growing up watching, your nana's watching the wrestling with you. And if Andrew now could go back and speak to Andrew then and offer just one piece of advice, what would it be?
Be proud of yourself, because even though in the moment you'll think you're not doing good things, you're a small... silly boy from a little town in Yorkshire that's gone on to do things you'd never imagine you could ever do. And You should be proud of yourself. And just enjoy the moment.
We're proud of you, small silly boy.
Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.